Ethereum researchers and developers have been debating for years now. It was going to get shipped in Petra. In the last minute, it got removed just because people didn't think it was ready. And now there's frustration because some people have spent tens, hundreds, thousands of hours poured into this thing. And now the community changed its mind and now it's not going in.
Particularly the Petra comments, many people actually got confused and believed that this discussion about Petra release that is coming the 7th of May, but it's actually Fusaka. We're talking about a thing 6 months from now. So it's not really a last moment removal. It's a removal of the feature that is designed to go in a fork that is not even fully scheduled. However, we want to accelerate it and say that clearly we'll deliver it for September and October. So the process is still very much about...
Welcome to Bankless, where we explore the frontier of internet money and internet finance. Today on the podcast, we're exploring the frontier of Ethereum's leadership. Today on the episode, we have the two new co-executive directors of the Ethereum Foundation, Tomasz and Xiaowei. These two new co-EFEDs represents a new chapter for Ethereum, for the Ethereum Foundation, and also for the Ethereum ecosystem too, I would say. This transition at the EF to new leadership has represented one shift of many that are needed for the direction of Ethereum that have left many hopeful about the future of Ethereum's progress. A future in which Ethereum has more operational leadership than it's had in the past. A future where upgrade cadences are accelerated and one where product mindfulness is prioritized. In addition to the two new EFEDs, we, Bankless Nation, also get to welcome Ryan back to his first interview podcast since his 3 months on sabbatical, and it's a good one to return to. Welcome back, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for scheduling this at, you know, like 12 in the morning, David.
It is currently 12:40 a.m. our time. Welcome back.
David and I are barely getting through this intro because we're exhausted. I think we're going to have to save the debrief for tomorrow, yeah. But I do want to talk to you about this episode because there's a lot in here. Yeah. I would just say we got dates, we got timelines, we got, it seems like some operational capacity to
some
deliver
CEO energy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like, I know not a founder, but like some founder energy here. Okay, it's like some operational efficiency. It's just, well, actually, Tomasz is a founder.
Yeah, Tomasz is a founder. Yeah, Tomasz is
a
founder.
He's not the founder of Ethereum, but he's a founder of like Nethermind and a fantastic ETH client. And I think what listeners will come away with is kind of what they hope to hear.
I think so, yeah.
Which is there is a direction that Ethereum is going in. And it's three phrases. It's scaling the Ethereum layer one, it's scaling blobs for layer twos, and it's improving user experience. It's that simple. All we have to do is that, David. And then, you know, we could celebrate, you know, six-digit ETH, you know, and higher. Yeah, so of course, like, the Ethereum Foundation isn't the entirety of the community, but it is a central point. It is almost like a kind of a compass. It is a essential coordinator of this whole operation. So it's pretty important to hear what they're doing.
It's funny that you latched on to scaling the L1, scaling blobs, and improving UX, because right before we started this episode, I saw Haseeb tweeted out the idea that the Ethereum pivot now has a motto. Scale the layer one, scale blobs, improve UX. So you are not the only one like latching on to these three focus points.
Well, you know what this does to me? I think, I guess we're getting into debrief territory, but this is like the delivery of the united chains of Ethereum, right? If you can make the Ethereum federal government, the layer one, a bit stronger, and if you scale out blob space, and if you can coordinate it all, build your interstate highways and such, then you basically create what has been the promise of Ethereum, which is these united chains.
Yeah. To translate Ethereum speak, improving UX is both for layer one users, but also UX for layer twos. And that comes with it, interop standards. And so that's all packaged in UX. Tomasz, again, more debriefy type stuff. Tomasz, when I asked him about like Ethereum's shift towards being a product centric ecosystem, that's how he synthesizes these three things into one, you know, scaling the layer one, scaling blob, scaling UX. This is Ethereum turning itself into a product that it wants to sell to the world. And in the moment of time when the world is looking at crypto and institutions are looking at crypto and they are looking to deploy, they are buying block space, they are buying blockchains as a way to like, you know, establish a settlement. Banks are establishing settlements on chains. Institutions are establishing settlements on chains. And Tomasz is, I think, like, viewing Ethereum as a product to bring to the world. And I think that is perhaps what the next phase of Ethereum is. under the management, under the new leadership of these two new co-EDs. So let's go, let's end our rambling, our 1240 a.m. rambling, and get right into the podcast. It'll be a little bit better, I promise you, Bankless Nation. So let's go ahead and get right into the conversation with Tomash and Xiaowei. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Have you ever imagined Bitcoin and Ethereum truly working as one, unlocking the full potential of Bitcoin DeFi and more? Meet Hemi, a groundbreaking modular network designed precisely for that vision. Co-founded by early Bitcoin core dev, Jeff Garzik. Unlike other layer twos that treat Bitcoin and Ethereum as separate silos, Hemi connects these giants into a single powerful super network. With Hemi, users gain unprecedented asset portability and possibilities, combining Bitcoin security and value with Ethereum's versatility. Hemi's unique innovation, the Hemi Virtual Machine, integrates a fully indexed Bitcoin node directly into an EVM, enabling dApps that seamlessly interact with both networks. And with Hemi's proof of proof, or POP consensus, users benefit from truly decentralized, censorship-resistant Bitcoin-level security. Since its recent mainnet launch, Hemi has rapidly ascended the ranks as one of the top Bitcoin chains. With a thriving global community and robust ecosystem support, Hemi isn't just building a network, it's shaping the future of Web3, DeFi, and beyond. Visit hemi.xyz/banklist to learn more, discover ways to interact, participate in the leaderboard program, and be part of the community that's uniting Bitcoin and Ethereum. Uniswap is your gateway to a more efficient DeFi experience. With Uniswap, swapping and bridging across 13 chains is simple, fast, and cost-effective, helping you move value wherever, whenever. Thanks to deep liquidity on the Uniswap protocol, you'll enjoy minimal price impact on every trade. And now Uniswap V4 takes it even further. Swappers benefit from gas savings on multi-hop swaps and ETH trading pairs, while liquidity providers can create new pools at 99% lower costs. The best part, you don't have to do anything extra. Each trade is automatically routed through Uniswap X, V2, V3, and V4, so you get the most efficient swap without even thinking about it. Whether you're swapping, sending, on-ramping, off-ramping, or bridging, Uniswap's web app and wallet gives you the tools to unlock DeFi's full potential on Ethereum, Base, Arbitrum, Unichain, and more. Use Uniswap's web app and wallet for a more efficient way to use DeFi. Imagine a world where your day-to-day banking runs on a blockchain. That's exactly what Mantle is building, powered by a $4 billion treasury and poised to become the largest sustainable on-chain financial hub. As part of their 2025 expansion, Mantle is introducing three new core innovation pillars that bridge traditional finance with decentralized technology. First is their enhanced index fund, aiming for $1 billion in AUM by Q1. It provides optimized exposure to Bitcoin, ETH, Solana, and USD, complete with built-in yield opportunities. Next, Mantle Banking promises to revolutionize global value transfer through seamless blockchain-powered banking services, bridging crypto into your daily life. Finally, Mantle X blends AI with DeFi to deliver an intelligent, user-friendly experience for everyone. And the best part is that this is all in addition to their already launched products like Mantle Network, METH, and FBTC. Ready to step into the future of finance? Follow Mantle on X at Mantle_official and join the on-chain revolution today. Bankless Nation, I'm here with Xiaowei Wang and Tomash Stanjak. Welcome to Bankless.
Great, good to see you. Welcome, everyone.
So I would like to get to know each of you a little bit better. Maybe we could take some time just to get to know you and then also introduce yourselves to the broad crypto and Ethereum community. What is your history with Ethereum and how did you come to be in the executive director position at the EF, the co-ED position at the Ethereum Foundation? Xiaowei, I'll start with you and then Tomash, we'll go to you afterwards.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me, David and Riot. So this is my first Bankless podcast and excited for it. Mm-hmm. So my background is computer science. I joined the Ethereum Foundation in 2017. At the time that I was the core protocol researcher and working on the first version of the sharding POC, the proof of concept. And so I worked closely on the Ethereum protocols. It's called just consensus protocol. It wasn't consensus layer and execution layers. But by the time we have the beacon chain, and since that, I work more closely with the consensus layer in Ethereum protocol. And I contributed to the transition to proof of stake, aka the merge, the transition. My role kind of like the co-lead of Ethereum Foundation consensus R&D team, and those mainly focus on the CL, the consensus layer specification, and also like a coordinator between the research side and the CL client case. Yeah, so that's my first 6 years or 7 years. And since last year in December, I joined the Ethereum Foundation leadership team. So leadership team was the core team to support the executive director. So before I joined leadership, I think the Ethereum Foundation researcher has a very special role. Rather than just working on the features, working on research, we also do care about how this feature will impact the users and what this feature can bring the values to Ethereum. So, but ever since joining the leadership team, I started to think more and more about, yeah, to drop my researcher hat and then think about the whole ecosystem. So I appreciate the experience at the leadership team, and that helped me to being the co-executive director with Tomáš. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Tomáš, over to you.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Once again, thank you for inviting me to Bankless. So my story with Ethereum starts maybe like even before joining with Netamind, starting a company. I think in like late 2015 or beginning of 2016, I went to a small meetup in London, and there were people launching and installing like some early versions of Ethereum for testing. And I went there to learn generally about crypto, about blockchain space. At that time, I was working in traditional finance industry in FX department of Citibank. And I remember when I came back, I started reading more and more about Ethereum. And that's probably the next year of my life, was coming back home and reading a lot of articles at that time from, I think it was CoinDesk mostly. 2017, I decided that, like, well, this is a time to start to build something in my life in general, to start a company. And in August 2017, I started Netamind. Netamind is nowadays probably known for many people as a core development infrastructure company for Ethereum. And this was my almost eight years building it from 2017 all the way to now. So starting in 2017, I had an idea at the beginning of building more like searching solutions. So it wasn't called searching, but trading on Ethereum. I wanted to trade on EtherDelta, and I thought that maybe I should learn how Ethereum works under the hood. So I started reading a yellow paper. And when I started reading yellow paper, I thought like the best way of learning it would be to implement some details from the yellow paper. I started coding it in C#. That was the language at the time that I was using all my life. And it was fun. Like, I couldn't stop. I thought like, oh, I implement a bit more. So I started with EVM. Then I started thinking about how all the technology works behind the scenes, and realized that I was more into the infrastructure than just writing the application. I did some trading. I started building some apps for trading on the centralized exchanges, and then realized that actually there was no client in language. I continued for like next 2-3 years heavily coding and slowly building the team that would help me, also building something at that time that was called Beta Marketplace, mostly imagining that sooner or later Ethereum will transition to this phase where traditional finance and generally all the large institutions will require tooling for accessing Ethereum. So accessing everything in a professional way. I was under the impression of a book at that time, Hedge Fund Wizards, which was telling stories of how in the like 70s or 60s, when people were trading, there was no tooling. And you really were transitioning from trading based on the TV news to trading that is all algorithmic and based on market data. So I thought the same rules would be for Ethereum, but very much accelerated, and building it would allow to build a company. Okay, that's a long story. Over time, it jumped to joining Splashbox in 2020, and that's like accelerated my journey a lot. I was also building at that time the project called Euler, which is still like the attempt to build the block space, like gas trading solutions. And around 2020, I think it's all the acceleration of DeFi space and the space for building helped a lot with Netamind. Netamind grew to a company of like around 300 people with a huge internship program that brought like 600 people into Ethereum ecosystem. And all that experience building with Flashbots for the last few years, MEV solutions, researching and product managing there, building the company, Netamind that does some security audits, that does infrastructure, that does core development, led to a position where I've been also on the core development calls for many years. I think I felt like a candidate with a lot of experience across all the parts, right? Like the building applications, building infrastructure, thinking of security of Ethereum, building up the business. And like a few months ago, like I had first conversations with Aya, but not about the topic of joining and the code, but more about advising on the leadership direction. And just this year, in February, Aya reached out and said, let's talk again. And it was a bit of a story, but not sure how much details you would like to know about it. But in the end, I decided, okay, let's do it. I joined, I think, Ethereum is asking for a bit of help and leaders to join, so I'll do that.
That's great. Welcome, guys. I would say the Ethereum community is really excited to have you in this role. This is the co-executive director position at the EF, a very important role in kind of coordinating everything that goes on with this world computer that we call Ethereum. Maybe we could just give some context to how we got here. So what were you brought in to do, would you say? And as you're arriving in the role, it sounds like, Xiaowei, you're kind of internal to the Ethereum Foundation. So you understand kind of the org structure. You've been there for a while. Tomas, you're kind of coming in outside of the Ethereum Foundation, which makes a nice complement to fully understand things and get off the ground running. But like some context, why were you brought in? Like, what are you here to do? What's the role actually entail?
So I think the role of Ethereum Foundation executive director is a job to think more than just like a company CEO, because this is a nonprofit organization. So in many terms, we have to think longer and the EF itself, what its mission is. So we recently announced several blog posts about Ethereum Foundation's visions, about Ethereum Foundation's management structure, and about what we wanted to do. So for the vision document, I think we highlighted what Ethereum Foundation's role would be. It would be like being the steward of the ecosystem. It would be like stand up when the ecosystem needs us the most at some focused area. And also we wanted to empower the ecosystem, other players to join us. So personally, I believe that, you know, for the EF itself, we need to brew the principles to ourselves. And then the principles should not be shake frequently. And then also enhance the resilient charge to be able to flexibly focus on the dynamic topics that we tackled every day. So this is my high level thinking about Ethereum Foundation's role.
Yeah, I think we're both coming with the experience of thinking about building the entire protocol, but also I think the roles of me and Xiaowei are very different, but naturally different. So like if you think how we're splitting the responsibilities, it's a bit like fluid. Like we don't decide it day on day. It just comes naturally. And we try to more like double the role of the co-ED and give opportunity to work with any of us to progress things faster. When I think about my story, so why would I come to Ethereum Foundation? Probably to bring that energy of experience of building organization, also working in the ecosystem. You know, my last 4 years, I've been nomadic. I met a lot of builders. I've been working with lots of people that joined the internship program at Dynamite. All of that means that it makes me probably much, much closer to people who are building Ethereum, who are like participating in all the hackathons programs, also serving a judge on many hackathons. So leading the organization, Ethereum Foundation nowadays is also around 250, 300 people, depending on which of the like organizations collaborate with Ethereum Foundation count as part of this larger project. So I see myself as a like energy that is coming to help with the like internal structure of the foundation, of accelerating the processes that happen internally, of saying, look, there are some inefficiencies that I see with my experience in management. There's some communication problems. And this was like almost the first thing that I addressed. So even before officially starting, I thought, look, there are some minor things at the foundation that can help a lot. Like there are so many talented people at the foundation that could communicate a lot, that could help to accelerate things. If you look at the team leads in the organizations, like around 40 people that are leading minor teams, and giving them the space to say, you are the real leaders of Ethereum Foundation. You're the real leaders that usually people are listening to when thinking about what happens with the future of Ethereum. Giving them space, giving them voice, giving them priority, and also allowing them to create structures that help them to understand together where the differences in their vision of Ethereum are, so they communicate better with everyone in the ecosystem. Furthermore, I think with my experience of building protocol, so for 3 years, I was really hands-on coding Ethereum client, right? Not my client. So that experience helps to maybe look at this technical aspect of what we should choose, how we should work on delivering features of what will happen with EIPs. You see, there's lots of challenges. Now we have EOF. We have other things that will be coming in the future. This will be thing. Then the ongoing conversations with the community now. So the last few weeks, I opened my calendars. I invited everyone to give feedback, to provide feedback. Now, very much welcoming the role of us coming and joining the podcast, starting to talk about what we plan. all of this is very much the role as well, like to look at the foundation in the past of the one that was not communicating frequently about the roadmaps and responding to questions from the media to the one that actually communicates a lot and tries to answer immediately, doesn't avoid the difficult questions. And I think that both I and Vitalik seen it and were very much aware that this might be the situation when they will feel sometimes uncomfortable about how much I want to say, about how we operate, how we want to operate. And I think that what they knew that it would make them sometimes uncomfortable for that vision delivery, that they really wanted it because they felt that this is what Ethereum ecosystem is also expecting. So that's one of my roles. And I think there's much more, right? Like looking at the entire ecosystem every day, there's a bit of a new challenge, and prioritizing temporarily for where I really need to contribute will be very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tomáš, you touched on a bunch of subjects that I think we want to spend some time and go deeper on. Before we really kind of get granular, though, I still want to say high level a little bit. Previously, Aya Miyaguchi's era of Ethereum, I think she defined as this addition by subtraction era for Ethereum. And I think that's what really will be her legacy with the Ethereum Foundation. And she really led Ethereum down that path, where I think the addition by subtraction era for Ethereum really allowed so much of the Infinite Garden to blossom. And that was what really, you know, how Aya's legacy is really defined. And I'm wondering if you guys have put your heads together and thought about something similar for your guys' role. The blog post that you guys have recently put out just today at the time of recording talks about the next chapter for Ethereum. And so maybe in, I don't know, how many years, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, however long you guys want to be co-executive directors of the Ethereum Foundation, how do you think we will remember you? What will your legacies be? How will you guys define the Ethereum Foundation and then the Ethereum ecosystem more broadly? Have you guys any thought about this at all? Tomáš, we'll start with you and then over to Xiaowei afterwards.
Sure. So I see my role as a much more dynamic one, like to look at the foundation now for the next 1-2 years and to bring all the changes that are a bit more short term that show that foundation can be dynamic and can adjust based on everything that is expected from it. Like that some changes may have immediate effect and be a bit maybe less long term. They still have impact long term because whatever changes you now, whatever helps within the first 1-2 year, whatever is very important for delivery now, will define the future of Ethereum. So I don't want to entirely like distance myself, or actually I want to place myself within this vision of what Aya and Vitalik said for foundation. And we had lots of conversations about what really the vision is within which I operate. I want to see myself more as a executive person here rather than a vision setter. I feel that like, my vision is there about Ethereum of the future, but I wouldn't like to impose it on what EF wants to achieve. Like, so this will be melting together every now and then, maybe clashing and leading to some discussions internally. But for me, that Infinite Garden makes sense, but maybe doesn't express sometimes the way I see the things that matter now for delivery of the protocol are the most important. But it do describe the ecosystem a lot, of the thinking of decentralization, of the ideas popping up and leading to lots of smaller organizations growing over time. And I think the Nanomind was an example of it, right? Like, so Nanomind existed very, very, very independently from Ethereum Foundation and led to a pretty successful contribution to the protocol. So I couldn't really dismiss it. I would say this is exactly the structure within which we thrived. But also now we see Ethereum where already there's lots of organizations and we think of how to accelerate all of this. Like you grew the garden, now you have to trim a bit and organize everything that grows there. So now coming back, like you asked about my vision. So I want Ethereum to be seen as this like global neutral layer for all the economy, all the transactions happening in the world. So it's really winning by impact to bring the values that we really care about. So when we talk about privacy, security, open source access, and as this censorship resistance of the protocol, then this matters for us. And we cannot make it happen if there is no impact of the protocol, if the protocol is not integrated in all the economy and the governance and in the AI processes of the future. So the coordination of whether it's agents or bots, however we'll call them, virtual employees. And this will matter. And having the win of the Ethereum mainnet will matter, because this will lead to L2s actually being able to benefit from that. And then L2s and L1 together will spread the values of Ethereum and distribute everything that happens internally. So this is the main driver for me, like win through as much impact as possible to bring the values. I think that in the future, everything should work on top of Ethereum the same way as everything works on top of internet nowadays. and to understand also that it exists within the values and vision that really mattered for many years. And I want it to be continuation, but with acceleration of lots of changes.
Mm-hmm. And Xiaowei, what do you want your impact to be on the Ethereum Foundation? How would you summarize the theme of what you are trying to lay the foundation for?
Right. So you mentioned that IaaS legacy. Mm-hmm. I can talk something about the legacy part. I told myself that I wanted to lead with clarity and move with purpose and build without attachment. By attachment, I mean like, so being a co-executive director of the Ethereum Foundation, it could be, also it's a nonprofit, it's a foundation. It could be seen as like a powerful seat in the community. But I think it's not about my personal legacy. And then I have to remind me of it every time that the things I'm doing here is for what the world we want to live in. It's like Ethereum is a level one permissionless blockchain, but it should be more than that. It should be more than just a product. It's also about the culture, the world that we want to live in. So I think these are the things I keep reminding me of. It's not my personal project. And then think of the like vision. So I hope Ethereum to be the most decentralized, the most permissionless, the most open blockchain in the world. So in order to do that, of course, we need to grow in some way. So the growth and the principles should be complemented to each other. So yeah, that's how I see we will focus on in the next few years. Like, we have to balance both the principles and how to grow Ethereum with resilience.
Yeah, the principles is something interesting because I do think that the Ethereum Foundation probably scores pretty high on principles. I think external observers would sort of say that. I'll give you a take from like somebody in the community, obviously in the outside looking at the Ethereum Foundation, because it feels like the community's reaction, there's a number of things that I think the EF gets high marks on. Right. So the research that the EF puts out is basically like best in class, right? It's like all of the other chains kind of like, you know, copy Ethereum and really admire the research work that the EF puts out. The values, you mentioned many of them. I think the EF has like done a fantastic job enshrining those in the protocol and really like living out those values. A diverse set of stakeholders, the amount of client teams working on this all over the world is just phenomenal. It truly feels like a vibrant open source community. I think all of that gets pretty high marks from those in the Ethereum community. What feels like has been lacking, I would say this is a word that Tomasz used a few times, the opposite of accelerate is it's slow. Things feel like sometimes they're not moving fast enough. I mean, we always want things faster, right? But the ability to kind of accelerate timelines, to commit to timelines, to deliver, that's something that the Ethereum community seems to want more of from the EF. Communication, that was also mentioned. Communication of the roadmap, obviously Vitalik did a fantastic job doing that. It needs to be simplified as well. And simple delivery of like roadmap in milestone form, I think would go a long way. Even things like the Ethereum Twitter account, which just like recently started firing again. I mean, that's great to see that communication. Saw some communication from Tomasz about, I believe it was just like maybe Pectra deliverables or something. And that was met with a lot of fanfare across the community because they thought it was clear communication. So communication is an area that we've needed. And this last piece is out of the ivory tower. So sometimes it feels like the EF is disconnected from the true use cases of, you know, people like me, people like David, people like in the Bankless community who are using DeFi on a day-to-day basis. So there's some fantastic marks for some areas of the EF and other areas where it feels like it's lacking. And the key piece, I guess, if I would sum it up, is kind of leadership or maybe operational leadership in kind of a phrase here. I'm wondering if you could just react to that. What do you think? I'm giving you my take, but it's also, I feel like, informed from the take of many in the Ethereum community, both on the pros and the cons of the EF. But does anything that I've said kind of spark anything in you? Maybe Tomasz first.
Sure, sure. All of it, I think. All of it. So not only you say it, but I had this like probably around 200 conversations in the last 2 months too. Sure, I had my own feeling of what Foundation was doing great, what Foundation was not doing best. I had my own feeling of like how I feel in the ecosystem. But it was important to see, are there some things that they're repeating in my conversations now? If people tell me what the strategy of Ethereum Foundation should be, what the future of Ethereum should be, that maybe I was not paying attention to. So the first 3 months of this year, I spent mostly in the Bay Area. So I still feel that I may have some bias towards, you know, like American community, but also had a lot of calls, lots of calls from around the world. And in the past, actually, I was much more present in Asia and in Europe. I would spend probably like half a year in Asia, half a year in Europe in the last 4 years. So yeah, people came back and they said, look, what's the North Star? How can you move faster? How we can work all of the eco dev, like ecosystem development, to bring the founders very quick to building applications? How can you build the pipelines that are super efficient in keeping people in Ethereum, in helping them, in mentoring them, and helping them succeed? How do you talk to DeFi builders, to the leading DeFi applications? How do you answer questions about the clarity of research and roadmaps to people who want to build staking solutions and want to understand what's the future of staking in Ethereum? The communication in general, like when the tough things happen, is Ethereum feeling like, yes, like ivory tower, something happens there, but nobody responds, nobody tells what their plans are, and you just learn from the actual events, and maybe you realize after time that this is exactly not what everyone was expecting from Ethereum as a network platform, a product, however you define it. So all of this. And as for the slowness, so sometimes I imagine like that people are really worried that Ethereum at some point would totally overfocus on research and long-term only and stop delivering. And it wouldn't be even decision for ossification of Ethereum, but just like endless exploration of what the end state would be, what the end game would be, but not really collaborating with those researchers who want to solve the problems now and here. And I feel like it's even more important now with a huge technological shift around AI. You just wonder, oh, everything is moving super much faster. And if Ethereum keeps talking about just like 5 to 10 years, it means that it doesn't participate in this massive shift over the next 1 to 3 years and doesn't adjust. Also, it doesn't adjust to maybe like competition and market changes of what people are expecting from us. So everything that people are complaining about is very much true. And I mean, like, because how you understand what the truth is, but just listening to the builders on Ethereum, to partners of Ethereum Foundation, as well VL2s as well, like telling, look, give us clarity on what happens between L1 and L2, how we can build on the platform without full assurances from researchers and strategists at the foundation that you know exactly where we'll be going in the next few years and how we can build together. So that's my role now, to change everything.
Can I ask you, Tomáš, really quick, before we get Xiaowei in here, are these problems fixable from your perspective?
Yeah, very much, very much. So first of all, I tell you, like when coming to Ethereum Foundation, I was wondering, what exactly is that the big problem that you see from the outside that you hear about? And if you come inside the organization, how it manifests itself, like from what it comes, what's the source of all of this? And I really was relieved at the beginning that some of it is just some, first of all, some small changes to communication internally. Second, some of the burden of the past of Ethereum operating within very hostile regulatory environment. And the same people that couldn't address some of those issues before were the ones that were very much open to address them directly now. And they just thought that they need some support and new faces from the outside that will be ready to execute that change within the culture. As for the, you know, like when you think about slowness, you have fantastic top organizations that are building on Ethereum that want to accelerate and help. If you talk to builders, VCs, like tech accelerator organizers, event builders around Ethereum, now on many calls, they say, look, Ethereum needs us. Like some of them will say, I've been dormant for the last 3-4 years, but I'm ready to come back and help. And maybe that understanding of how many people want Ethereum to win and think that when I'm needed, I will come. And this will make a difference as well. That just gives a lot of like, not even hope, but like a conviction that, okay, this will be great. This will be a great journey now to show everyone how much of a juggernaut Ethereum is, but also how much of a like fast moving juggernaut it is. And all of the strength combined of the people that our team leads and want that change. And you would see like the people internally at the EF were extremely impatient for that change. They wanted to participate in it themselves. So it's not like I'm coming to the organization that has a culture of, we don't want it, we don't want to participate in this like massive shift. You come and all the team leads say, fantastic, fantastic that this is happening. Fantastic that we have this CoD set up and we can execute now. Like just let us do that. And it was also one of the first decisions. It's like, no, it's not exactly like me and Xiaowei to execute much of it. It's just telling people, look, you're free to go now. Be free to go and execute what you wanted to execute. And you're empowered to act as a leader of an organization. And I think that we already see a bit more of, like, if you talk to like Asghar and Dankrat and we say, yeah, it's okay that you have voices that are sometimes seen as controversial, as like counter to some of what other people are saying, but you really have a great understanding of what we're building, but also internally you have to agree. But you will be able to lead much of the strategy because you have this understanding of where we should go. It shouldn't be like me and Xiaowei coming and telling everyone what to do, but very much coming, listening, and very fast bringing people back to the decision together, but in an accelerated way. So you can still have organizations very, very decentralized, but move much faster. And well, people will be asking about decisions here and there of saying, look, there's a stalemate, like they decide and let's move forward. And some decisions will be more public and some decisions will be still internal to the EF, but will be happening. So at some point, we'll decide of how the events of within Ethereum would change everything and how they should change everything. And then we'll communicate over time what exactly happens and why. And sometimes requires a bit more of the introspection about the foundation. So all of it is fixable. We can communicate very clearly. We can invite people to the table to talk about the product in the future. We can hear from DeFi applications, from stakers, from liquid staking protocols, from other researchers. We can invite them to tell us where we should be in 2 or 3 years, and also restructure the Alcor Devs format to like talk about Ethereum as a platform, as a product 2 years from now, and then talking about Ethereum as a delivery of next 1-2 forks, and Ethereum as a delivery of the next fork of like the how to deliver the next fork the fastest. Because I think this was not common in Ethereum, that if you had a next fork, the timeline would be accelerated, that you set the timeline and you think like, can you deliver it faster? Can you remove something from this fork to say, now we wrapped up with all the most important things, let's just ship it. All of this is fixable, and I try to not ever use like the months or years in timelines. I want to say that if something is to be addressed, then we should think, can we do it tomorrow or next week, the latest, and start seeing results and then maybe adjust. So, you know, it's the first month, but I think we've done already a bit, and I hope that every week we'll bring some changes that you enjoy to see in Ethereum.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and roll-ups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Imagine verifying yourself without handing over personal data. No hacked databases, no unnecessary personal exposure for airdrops, and no AI bots ruining community governance. Meet Self, the on-chain identity verification protocol built for privacy and control. Self protocol uses zero-knowledge proofs to confirm your identity safely. Users prove key details like age or citizenship without revealing sensitive personal information. Self never stores your data. It only generates cryptographic proofs. Here's how it works in 3 steps. First, register and verify. Use the Self app to scan your biometric passport's RFID chip. Self verifies authenticity with zero knowledge proofs. Each passport creates one unique identity. Second, you can share proofs privately. Third-party apps request identity proofs, like confirming you're over 18. You can also link proofs securely to public wallets for airdrops or governance participation. And then last, secure verification. Apps validate your proofs instantly on-chain, like on Celo, or off-chain. Audited by ZK Security, the Self app is live on iOS and Play Store. Visit self.xyz and follow Self Protocol on X.
Tomasz, this is the first time that you and I have spoken, the first time that we've met. It's great to meet you. From what I have heard through the grapevine from around the space is that you are a chronic workaholic, that you work very, very hard, and you have worked very, very hard at Nethermind, and Nethermind has just the might to show for it. 300-person company, as you said. And from everyone that I've talked to who's worked under you and with you, just immense respect as a leader, as an operational leader. Now, understanding that, I see you in an interesting position, a tightrope that you have to walk, because I think a lot of people in the Ethereum community are looking for somebody exactly like you to take the reins and to provide operational excellence and clarity and leadership on things in the Ethereum community that Ryan like identified, you know, slow cadence of progress, slow updates, you know, coming to consensus faster, moving the ship faster. At the same time, Ethereum has always been built around this idea of like these decentralized emergent ecosystem. How does the Alcor devs call operate? It operates with rough consensus. And there's this like interesting case study happening right now with the EOF debate. What EOF is, I don't think it really matters. It's this like technical thing that Ethereum researchers and developers have been debating about for years now. It was going to get shipped in Pectra. In the last minute, it got removed just because people didn't think it was ready. And now there's frustration because some people have spent, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of hours poured into this thing. And now the community changed its mind and now it's not going in. And so in terms of efficiency as an organization, like pretty terrible marks, like we're just burning all of this like man hours, these labor hours for this thing that ultimately just didn't get included. And I think to quote an Ethereum core developer who tweeted out, to me, the fault is not about doing or not doing EOF. The fault is about the lack of capacity to decide. And so I think, you know, broadly, we want this leader to come in and just crack the whip and tell us exactly how it's going to go. And at the same time, this goes against some of the values that you are supposed to uphold as a member of the Ethereum Foundation and what the Ethereum Foundation stands for and the rough consensus that represents Ethereum governance. So I see these two things in tension. Maybe you could just reflect upon that and talk about how you think about that challenge that is in front of you.
Sure. On the communication side, you see how quickly the things spread that confuse people. Like when observing what happens on ACD, that particular, the Pectra comment, you know, like many people actually got confused and believed that this discussion about the Pectra release that is coming the 7th of May, but it's actually Fusaka. We're talking about, I think, 6 months from now. So it's not really a last moment removal. It's a removal of the feature that is designed to go in a fork that is not even fully scheduled. However, we want to accelerate it and say that that clearly will deliver it for September and October. So the process is still very much about the future. And it's just that a few weeks ago, we said this, now we're closing the specification and planning for September, October fork. And the bigger outreach is that might be like for core developers that they said clearly that they wanted to go in. And now we have discussion about actually after we decided it goes in, then the ecosystem or more like the application builders say, look, like we want you to prioritize other things for a few months from now. We want you to remove it because we're absolutely not convinced that this is what we need. And you have a bit of a clash of thinking how Ethereum should look a few months from now. But coming back maybe first before we go too much in details in EOF. So you mentioned that, yeah, working a lot and being very active and energetic. So I enjoy it a lot, right? As I agree with that. I joke very often that I replaced me playing too much computer games with me doing a lot on the business side and just feeling like it brings the same kind of like emotions and excitement as like doing something every day. And I enjoy it similarly. So now the question is how not to burn yourself by feeling that you have to deliver everything, but at the same time, make this energy work a bit, amplify itself. So it's not always about you coming and decide for everything, and or like rarely it is about this. You do a lot and you actually want to activate as many people in the community as possible. And you want to activate as many decision makers as possible and tell them, look, it's okay to take decisions. And you are the one who should take decision, or you're the one who should accelerate the things. You're the one who shouldn't wait. And just telling people to do that takes a lot of time, right? Because there's lots of people. So having like hundreds or thousands of conversations and telling people move faster. Like you have this idea, okay, like execute it tomorrow. No, don't plan it for after the release or after the meeting or after the offsite. Like people in the community do it surprisingly often. Like they wait for some major conference or some offsite or some meeting or some call to execute some actions, but they can do that like pretty much straightforward the very next moment. And this takes a lot of time to prepare people for this space of thinking you never have to wait for things. You don't have to think like annually or monthly about things, but you can think of it like just do as fast as possible. So people want it. People want the leaders. Yes, but the leaders show them maybe how not to wait, how to rush, how to care about things, and how to be very open about your own beliefs about where the protocol should go. But also don't be too worried about clashing those opinions. Like that, even bringing EOF much faster to this discussion level, which he did, this is important. So as you say, EOF is a few years in the making on various levels. He actually was in the AllCore Dev calls 4 or 5 years ago, when some of the first EIPs that nowadays build EOF were discussed and were actually not delivered. Also were removed like pretty last moment, like the EIP 663 was removed after it was accepted. So the team around EOF like always was in this very difficult position of having to decide the changes that are not exactly directly related to what the application developers would build, would think of, that they use it, they didn't would know directly how to use it. And it was always a complaint that they didn't address it directly. And maybe now this is opportunity for me to, well, for sure, there's opportunity for me to say how to finally fix that process and how to bring the application devs to the very early stages of planning the AP. And I think it's kind of everyone believes that this happened already. But sometimes you just don't bring the right people that you expect to be the most against what you're building, because you decide to bring the people that represent the same category of like you think applications, but then you think, let's bring those who agree with what I would do, what I would say. But instead, you want to actually find people who would be the most against the feature and listen to them at the beginning and think like how do you build something that is so important, so much changing everything for better, that even them will be totally overridden by everyone else's opinion that it has to go in. And I think that's what is lacking now at the EOF, that when we have calls, there are core developers that say we want to deliver that. And from the outside of the core development teams, you have people coming to the calls and saying, we don't want it. We feel uncomfortable about this change. We think that there's much to address here, but this is not the way to go. And you don't have maybe the same amount of strong voices that come and say, we understand what's the problem here, but we really need it. Like, ship it, because this will change everything for us. So we didn't have ZK teams on the call saying, this has to ship, because otherwise we don't see the performance improvements that we'd like to see. Maybe because they see performance improvements that are 10x somewhere else, and this is maybe a few percent or 10 or 50%. I'm guessing here, I'm just like speculating around what people would say, but it feels that maybe this is that direction. Does it mean that I have to come and resolve it immediately and say, this is what we're doing? Over time, maybe I'll do it more and more often if it's needed. Like if there is a stalemate, I'll say, this is what I believe in. Now I still feel that even with all my experience around the EVM, this was not the topic that I wanted to claim too much of the like clear understanding of the like technical complexities in. And it's just 1 month in. I covered a lot of other topics, like thinking of the organization. I want to move myself a bit closer to the technical roadmap aspect of it. I might feel that now this will be what people will ask for. How to deliver Fusaka the fastest, how to deliver Glamsterdam, how to increase the scaling of L1 by 3x, 10x. People are asking about this, maybe a bit less about the communication, about the organization of the structure of EF, or we already addressed that, many of those components with Shaoi. So I'll just move again, like to the place where people feel there is the most need for leaders and for guidance and for acceleration.
Yeah, Shaoi, I want to get your thoughts in here. How do you see getting involved with this like coordination process that Tomáš was talking about, or just generally what came to mind as Tomáš was speaking?
Yeah, so back to the first question Ryan shared. I mean, I fully agree with Ryan about that EF has been in a comfort room for a while, the first few years. And then now we are having more challenges that we both want to grow. So I think this COED, the dual executive director planning stack, it's actually show like how we wanted to increase our capacity at the Ethereum Foundation. And then it's like, we want to do more about different areas, and then we want to move faster. So like, it's interesting from Tomáš' interview, you can see like, so like, I want to do like 5 times faster, but Tomáš might want to do 10 times faster. So I think that's great. I think that's great that he pushed the teams to move faster. And at the same time, we can give each other the context about what's the meaningful things about the first decision, that what the impact of it. So this conversation happened in our internal chat every day. So I think my point is that shifting focus doesn't necessarily mean that we want to do less in another part. I think it's important to do things more effectively. So it's that if we can increase the efficiency, then naturally we could be able to do more things in this new area and then in the place that we didn't touch enough previously. So in the past few months, I think it's even if since 2025, early this year, like the EF itself, we had identified like application is important and then like communication is important. And then we had some early initiatives to address these problems. But maybe in this leadership transition, then we started to be able to do more actions on it. So like, I know we started to know, okay, not started, but like we know users wanted like better UX, like they need faster confirmation time and they want the cheaper and the greater throughput in Ethereum layer one. So these things we identified, and then now is to think like how we address them. And about like isolation, like, yeah, first is indeed we are bringing some culture change at the Ethereum Foundation. And then it's good that the changes happened. It's likely to be somewhat top down in the foundation itself. And we also hope that these new vibes, the new, like, helping community to be more focused together. It's not just Ethereum Foundation, but also all the partners, the builders, the other projects, companies that we could learn, like, okay, this is the Ethereum in 2025. Like, we want to move faster. And then to with this kind of spirit, hopefully we could isolate Ethereum's development. And it's not saying we shift to something else totally. I think research is still important. Research is still like a heart of a technical projects, but we wanted to do more effectively.
So let's talk about doing more effectively in the next 12 months. In the blog post you two co-authored, there were three objectives. And I like the number three. I mean, it's very easy to remember, very simple. So you've got number one, scaling Ethereum L1. It's the layer one, somewhat new. That's the first objective. Number two, scaling blobs. That's, of course, the block space, the express lane for layer twos. And then number three, improving user experience. I think this maybe addresses some of the interoperability problems across all of the layer two chains, but probably some other UX issues as well. So we've got three things there, scaling Ethereum L1, scaling blobs, and improving UX. How did you come up with these objectives? Why these? How are you going to achieve them? When are we going to see them? Tomasz, what's your take on this?
Yeah, sure. I think the first time they were expressed that clearly when Josh Rudolph posted a tweet about it. And I thought, like, look, this expresses the three most important things that I've heard from multiple conversations. And let's start repeating it because it really brings clarity. And also, people reacted very positively to it, and both internally and externally, as much as we can read, like everything. You always meet some voices, but it can feel the vibe of change and where people want to go. So first of all, the Ethereum mainnet was like one requirement for many people to say, look, like, show that you are strong, that you want Ethereum to win, that you think that Ethereum mainnet will always be outclassing competitors on the quality of research, of the strength of the protocol, decentralization of the protocol, security of the protocol, but speed as well, like the throughput. Because over time, like every layer one chain that focuses on speed, like you can have some technology changes that will bring them to the same level. Whatever happens, whenever someone just feels like they're ahead a bit for a while, you can make changes to the protocol and say, this actually is the same speed within a single chain. And then we say, but how do we address questions about L2, L1 relationship? And just as mentioned, scale blobs really It's an expression of the general support for the L2 ecosystem, but also expressing it through its connection with L1, right? So you want to say, we want to support L2s. This is a massive success of the Ethereum that L2s are scaling and bringing users. And how do you bind it to layer one, to Ethereum mainnet? You say Ethereum mainnet will deliver the anchoring, the layer from which like the L2s will borrow security, will borrow all the values. I'll say, only through the strength of the layer one, they can bring to the users what they will expect, like the levels of safety, the level of decentralization. So I wanted to strengthen that feel. And also now for the UX, you say you address the concerns about L2s and L1 and didn't feel like one chain for a long time, and people started feeling uneasy about it. Also, there were further questions about long-term, what are always the challenges of like the ease of use, of security, of like managing your assets. Also, all the novelties. So I think UX is there to express all of this. Like we care about the interop improvements over the next few months, and we'll put a lot of initiatives and clear roadmap around it. And it's a difficult topic. Like there's lots of technical questions, lots of coordination questions, lots of tough decisions to take as well, because when you want everything to feel much closer, then maybe at some point you have to clearly define where the boundaries are, when something doesn't really fit the set of tooling that you want to prepare. So UX comes with decisions of execution of roadmap, with technical challenges that will resolve. UX also means security in general, right? So user experience, if they feel comfortable using chain, then the experience is better. We think that Ethereum already is a like extremely secure chain with all the design that is behind it. But also generally for blockchain, the risks of hacks, especially if you hold like billions or over time, maybe trillions of dollars of assets in a fund, how you address it on the security side. So this will be important as well in the UX. The latency of blocks, like the pre-confirmations, the feeling around trading within hundreds of milliseconds, you want to improve it. You want to deliver all of this, either through L1 directly or through the fact that you prepare all the changes that will be carried by L2s to the users. All of this is part of UX. And I feel that DevX, to some extent, is also UX in the space of blockchain. You want builders to really feel that this is the platform. They are users of the platform. They're users of the network. So they want to have great experience building on the platform. They want to have great tooling. They want to have clarity on the roadmaps. No surprises. They want to have support. They want to have support from the ecosystem. They want to have the feeling that when building on Ethereum, they'll be successful and they'll be impactful. So all of this can be expressed in these 3 points. There'll be more about the internal structure, organization, the addressing problems, but these are all just to support those 3 goals for the next year.
Mm-hmm. Part of the UX part of this, I think, draws attention to something that I've just seen as a theme coming out of the Ethereum community is a request towards increasing the value of product in the Ethereum ecosystem. And so like some are calling this like a product-centric Ethereum. And I think maybe product is like maybe the opposite side of the spectrum of research, like research being one of the things that Ethereum and the EF has scored so well on. And maybe product is something that Ethereum and the EF has not scored so well on. So maybe Tomasz, maybe you could just lean into that concept of like a product centric Ethereum. And is this part of improving UX? Is that part of that same effort? Or is this in addition to that? What's your reaction to that?
Probably the product-based approach, like when thinking about Ethereum, is what makes everything else happen. Right? These 3 objectives, directions, they'll happen if you have the way of thinking about Ethereum as a product to some extent. What it means that there are people that look at Ethereum and think, why we make changes, why we deliver new features, what people are asking for, who are the people who will use the Ethereum and protocol. So you make sure that everything that you do is related to some goals that will make an impact on some people. And that while you're doing that, you talk to those people about the changes and you involve them in the process of co-designing. At the same time, also with the product, you think of quality of the product and the core values that are long-term. So you make sure that you don't over-adjust to all of those opinions. But every single of those things has to happen. So this all would make Ethereum more like a product and what it means specifically. So if you think about EOF, sure, you think about the security, scalability of the protocol, the long-term thinking of improving the network. But if you come back to the beginning, how did you start this process? Like, who did you talk to? Who should be involved? Who do you go back to asking about, are we going still in the right direction? Every month or every quarter, you say, is it still looking like what you're expecting? This will be the changes. This will how it will affect you. Are you aware of this? Would you like to raise some concerns? What do you think of the quality of how we're executing so far? Can you look at the progress? Is it the quality that matches the quality of Ethereum? And for every other single feature, it should be like this. Like, if you want to scale, we want to make it clear of, like, does it affect decentralization? How it affects decentralization? If it affects decentralization, which users of the protocol will feel that it goes too far, or maybe like it makes them uncomfortable, asking them for opinions on it and bringing them and asking, like, do you have suggestions on should we approach it differently? Maybe we picked up some research, but there are easier ways of addressing the same problem, or actually maybe this is not exactly the problem or priority. So nowadays, I think also we have to define what structures within the organization address it. So how ACD should be restructured to include that product conversation, how to establish the very clear, like, databases, almost like lists of people that you want to talk to about various aspects of Ethereum. If you think about DevEx experience, how you think about the maybe like the growth hacking, not hacking, but growth and product adoption of Ethereum. And how do you define, again, like the super fast process of tracking, monitoring results of you building the ecosystem? Do people feel lost if they come to hackathon? What happens next? Like, what happens the next day on Monday after the hackathon? Do they start building on Ethereum? Do they feel like Ethereum is a product for them that's like, it comes with answers, with clarity of like how to build on Ethereum, what to choose, which technology to start with, and who will help you to build, and how you get funding for all of this? If we have all of the components of that in Ethereum Foundation, but also with other organizations, if we have partners that know how to operate within those pipelines, then all of that feels like you talk about the product. Mm-hmm. You talk about product for someone and not the product that you just imagined.
Mm-hmm. You identified in that the idea of like focusing on goals that have impact upon people, which brings to the mind of like how we actually measure success. In the blog post that you two co-authored, which we will link in the show notes, and if anyone's listening to this, I highly suggest actually additionally reading the blog post. A line that you wrote in your section, Tomasz, you said, "We will focus on speed of execution, accountability, clear goals, objectives, and metrics to track." I think these are all kind of the operational leadership that I think everyone is very excited to see you provide to the EF. Talk about the metrics a little bit more. Like, what high level, I know you're only 1 month into your role at the EF, but what are these metrics that come to mind as just like high scores of the Ethereum protocol or of the Ethereum community that we should all aspire to?
I would say that not all of this is yet specified. As you say, it's 1 month into looking into your organization and now looking at the protocol and thinking of how these goals and strategies and directions that we defined, how they now go to every single team and how they define the metrics of how we measure the progress. And then later creating dashboards internally that will tell us what's the progress on every single of those. And for now, we have like some simple targets on the scaling one, right? So we say, oh, it's 3x this year and 10x altogether next year. And Dankrat actually suggested this like a exponential scaling roadmap that says...
It was 100x over 4 years, right?
Yes. So like if you do it 3x every year, I think that's where you get, which means that you start with changes to review of all the clients and how ready they are, and that survey already happened. Then you continue with the changes via EAPs to execution layer, consensus layer. Then you talk about this like 3-4 years, which is mostly ZK and acceleration for ZK. So those, as you mentioned here, 100x over 4 years is a big metric to follow. And now we just make sure that we anchor around it, that this is not just the number that was thrown without thinking of restructuring all the protocol building or the protocol development and research around this like 100x. Now you go to every single research team and say, what you're building, how does it refer to this 100x direction? Like, are you working on the first year of 100x, on the second year, third year, fourth year? And if you look at the entire organization, how big percentage of researchers and engineers in the Ethereum Foundation in the ecosystem are focusing on the first year, because it should be probably much more than the 4 year.
What you just described there sounds a little bit like a North Star, which is like, I think, pretty exciting and coming full circle to the beginning of this conversation. And it does sound like a lot of exciting changes are ahead for the Ethereum Foundation and for the Ethereum community. But I want to ask the question. I know the Ethereum Foundation doesn't have infinite capacity, can't do everything. And I think sometimes the expectations of the community can be, well, the Ethereum Foundation will solve this, right? Why isn't ETH price trading at $100,000 right now? Well, that's the Ethereum Foundation's problem. And I'm curious because I think people don't understand the complexity of this ecosystem and how many moving parts there are and how decentralized it truly is and what is actually in scope for the Ethereum Foundation versus what's out of scope. Maybe the best way to ask this question is, what are some of the things you think that the community expects the EF to do that you actually aren't set up to do, that you don't do at all, that's kind of out of scope? Xiaowei, you probably have some context hearing many of the things over the years. What comes to mind? What is the EF just not set up to do, but people still expect the EF to do it?
One controversial one, starting with a controversial one, is like EF shouldn't sell ETH. It's like we need, community expect we to hold the ETH, just hold it and then, but in order for the EF to operate it and to pay for this over 200 internal EFers to pay grants, we do need to sell some ETH. So that's something I think is like expectation from community and it's quite different from we do. But
so you're saying the community expects you not to sell it, but you have to sell it in order to fund the operational staff. And
so that's
an unfair expectation.
Yeah, that's a simple one. And then secondly, I would say like the EF doesn't do some things directly, but we are willing to do maybe through grants. So for the most critical things that only EF can do, we are more hands-on. We will allocate internal resources to do them. But for the second level, like for example, I think the definition of business development is a dynamic matrix here for Ethereum. It's like what kind of development that EF should do directly. I think we would support through grants for some events, and then we would support with like supporting like mentors, hackers to onboarding hackers. But in order to onboarding people, I think EF's role is more coordinator to help people to find the correct resource in the ecosystem. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to do. It's like we were willing to empower other people to do more.
Yeah, I guess my perception of the EF and what it does versus what it doesn't do is like, so obviously the research and coordination for shipping big protocol changes, that's kind of the core of it. Also, you know, throwing developer events, that kind of thing. But the EF is actually not doing the engineering work that goes into the consensus clients and the execution clients. I mean, some people don't even know that. Mm-hmm. These are all separate teams that are actually building this. The EF is not a party responsible to do what Michael Saylor is doing with Bitcoin, which is like just like buying more Bitcoin. Yeah. The EF, from my perception, is not doing a lot of business development and talking to, you know, like Wall Street about how to use Ethereum and how to onboard the blockchain. So like there are separate entities doing some of that work, but it's not really the EF. And I think sometimes people expect the EF to fulfill all of those roles as if it was a centralized company like Apple or something like that. And that's just not how the EF is positioned to work. Yeah. Tomasz, do you have any takes on this? Any insights?
I feel very often that like EF should be there where somehow for a moment, for a longer time, there's nobody. So then it means that they maybe there should be almost anything that the Ethereum doesn't do, the foundation doesn't do. However, sometimes it means that Ethereum Foundation realizes that there is that gap and there should be some organization that deals with it and help these organizations to appear. Maybe sometimes it's just highlighting the problem and saying, look, that's like, it's missing. So how do we build it? How do we start it? And then let it grow and let it handle the thing. So you mentioned things like talking to Wall Street. You probably think of like talking to governments. And while Foundation for sure doesn't want to be like ever coordinating that work and it's never done in the past. However, it wants to be available for answering questions and act as one of the organizations in the ecosystem that is very knowledgeable and can help with that process, right? So if Wall Street, if government institutions, if they come and then ask for help, for support in the sense of like, we have those questions and we seeking for the like best experts that can tell us what happens now, what will happen in the future, that we want to be there. And sometimes maybe in the past, Foundation would feel not only we don't want to be coordinators, we definitely don't want to, but also we want to even like avoid any interactions. And this is what I would like to change. Like the interactions are normal and fine, and we just like one of the many organizations in the Ethereum ecosystem. So if you ask that, should we be coordinators and seen as like the owners of Ethereum? No. So this Ethereum Foundation will never do. And maybe this is like super clear. We're not owners of Ethereum protocol. We're not act as owners. We're not act as like, so here also it refers to those decisions, right? Like if you have decisions to be made, it's all about helping others to take those decisions. Like saying, look, those decisions are not made. And these are the people that are really high agency and are important in the protocol space, and they should be visible and they should be empowered to take those decisions. You mentioned a few other things like the engineering or business development, or like some people mentioned also marketing. So the engineering wise, we have Gav team internally. We don't build consensus layer clients. So consensus layer clients are external. And Gav team has been building this extremely successful and robust execution layer client since the beginning. And Ethereum Foundation always felt it's like this is extremely important input for researchers to have internally, and it's good to rely on one client in that space. Should Ethereum like initiate more work like this, like building applications or building infrastructure directly in the future, build the tooling? Probably not. So we'll be avoiding all of this. But it's not because we wouldn't if it was needed. That's just the ecosystem. It's ready to take care of it. Like, so we can, and I think now like this business development part, we want to be a bit more active here. At least I want to be more active here. And I still like test how much of pushback on it is there in the foundation, but it feels that foundation wants to be the helper, like the business developer, in the sense that it talks to much more organizations. It helps the like applications to connect with other applications, applications to find customers, applications to find talent, to find research that they can use for launching products. And foundation is very often like the point of contact, or like even first point of contact for many of these players that feel a bit lost. So they can go to ethereum.org, but they can also reach out to foundation people. And instead of foundation giving grants every single time as like the only solution, that you can come to foundation, ask for a grant, and you receive like yes or no and the value of the grant. Instead, we'd like to be much more active in helping founders with particular problems that they're facing very often at the beginning that are much more valuable than just throwing money at founders. Like founders come and would like to interact with people that have time for them, that have solutions, like efficiency solutions for them, and know how exactly to accelerate them to the next stage of their journey. And that will make me much more happy about how foundation can be impactful. Like instead of just saying the only thing that foundation would like to deal with is treasury, I would like it to generate value in many other ways, like by just involving people in the ecosystem, whether it's accelerators, incubators, VCs, L2s, and take advantage of the fact that they exist in the ecosystem and that they want to help. And they want also to bring capital into the ecosystem. And we can help for that capital and that effort, those efforts of all the participants to be multiplied by just creating the network. I mean, like so much of Ethereum is about creating the network of the social layer is what Foundation can do very well. On the marketing side, I think we don't want to maybe create this like branding or advertising style of marketing, but the communication and clarity is also part of marketing. And I think we're still exploring here of how much on the marketing side we should do. I listen to a lot of Twitter influencers and people who dealt with marketing a lot telling us how to address it. And I sometimes feel that maybe to grasp the entirety of Ethereum and feel what it means to create marketing campaigns for Ethereum, it's actually tricky. I think that not many people have experience with a product like this that has to be neutral, that has to be decentralized, and to show that those properties through the message, through the marketing message, well, probably you can do it right, so we'll explore it for sure. So I'm more on the side of Ethereum Foundation should do almost everything when it's missing from the ecosystem, rather than say like there's some clear things and no go, except for that one of like acting as an owner. Or maybe like it should act as an owner, but not be as an owner. That's important.
Well, Tomasz, if the EF wants to do more, I'm sure some people listening can give you a whole big list of things that could be done. I expect some of that follow-up after the show. But Tomasz Chaouet, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. And we're certainly cheering you on in this joint role as you take Ethereum to the next frontier. Just a quick question on kind of roadmap and what's coming next. So, of course, we got our goals, right? Which is scaling Ethereum L1, scaling blobs, and improving the user experience. Those three priorities are deployed over a series of hard forks that happens with Ethereum every how many months? How many months has it been on average? 9, 12, longer, shorter, something like this?
We're planning every 6 months now.
Every 6 months now. That would be a change. Mm. So how many hard forks have we shipped 6 months apart in Ethereum so far? Have we done any?
Not much. I think historically it would be more like between 12 to 18 months.
Okay. Well, that would be a fantastic speed up in cadence. But the next one is Pectra. And is that May 7th?
May 7th. Pectra, I think that apart from changes to staking with max effective balance, you're waiting for massive UX improvement via SFS 1.02, so things related to account abstraction. And yeah, like we were very happy to ship it to make sure that it's like fully tested, safe. This is just the main focus now, obviously, like already for the last few months, all the test nets, verification, and it continues. And after 7th of May, we immediately want to spawn the devnets for Fusaka. There'll be also like a larger gathering of all the core developers and researchers working towards accelerating the goals. So this became a tradition of like how to accelerate every single next challenging fork or challenging upgrade. It was with the merge. It was then later with the withdrawals and so on. So I want to make sure the peer desk comes this year. I mentioned September, October. Now the question is, could we accelerate it? How we make sure that it never gets delayed? So then you would have like the 5 months timeline for Fusaka. And it means that we want to start with DevNets immediately, and we want to start with focus of all the teams and ensuring like if there is anything that is sneaking into the fork that potentially delays it, no. And then there is Glamsterdam that we would plan for, let's think, like between March and June next year. Now, I feel like if this is the cadence that we're talking about, that's what we should expect. But people are already thinking about how to deliver the L1 scaling acceleration through Glamsterdam fork next year. So some of it can be done without changes, without the fork, some of the scaling, and some of the scaling will definitely require the EIPs to ship that. So that's the next month. And separately on the ecosystem development side, like James Smith leads the lots of changes into the like pipelines and communication and structuring the ecosystem development at the Ethereum Foundation to address over the next 2 months, already create those pipelines and address the founders' needs or the builders' needs and in building the enterprises, and like they want to come to us and ask, what do we do with tokenization or RWA? How do we deploy lots of funds on Ethereum? How do we launch stable coins? Where do we mint? How do we collaborate with L2s? All of this will be addressed also for that small restructuring that James is executing. Further, Team Beko is already coordinating the L-Core Dev restructuring to focus on those very fast testing and deliveries. So if we want to have the 6 months cadence, well, we realize that then we have to propose something that will be accepted as a much more operational format. And immediately, obviously, the communication changes and involving the DeFi builders and, well, general like application builders to tell us what they need after Glamsterdam. Because I told you, like, this is what we want to deliver. And they already would tell us, we decided, and we didn't ask. I think that we decided and this aligned with what the application developers need, but we didn't yet decide of what happens next after that. So what happens 2 years from now after Amsterdam and process about this fork should be of like really massive participation and this product focus. So the process changes for that should happen as well within the next month, I think.
Well, this may have been the most bullish part of the conversation. We got dates and deliverables for hard forks, which is very exciting. And, you know, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all those details. And we wish both of you very well in the future as you develop on this. Exciting times, of course. Bankless Nation, as you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.